Dr. Rick Funston, and Rick is with the University of Nebraska, a native of North Dakota. He's got his BS from NDSU, degrees from Montana State and Wyoming. That's where his PhD is from. He had a postdoc fellowship at CSU, was assistant professor at Chadron State University, and then extension B specialist for Montana State before taking a position as a reproductive physiologist at the University of Nebraska West Central Research and Extension Center in North Platte. It's a little long, Rick. Rick's going to talk a little bit about some of the things he works with as far as some of the fetal programming things that we've seen, and some neat stuff to talk about with the performance on heifer calves with that. He's worked with low-cost methods of heifer development while maintaining reproductive performance as research emphasis. He was the first to demonstrate the effects of fetal programming on subsequent reproductive performance in heifer calves. Let's welcome Rick to the podium.
Well, thank you, and it's good to be here. Glad to see so many people. Is this on? Maybe a near record attendance for NCBA in these trying economic times is really speaks volumes of the importance of the that you know it is to show up here. And you probably had to make other sacrifices to maybe attend this convention with the challenges in the economy. Agriculture people are very entrepreneurial and find a way to get to town. I was in Kansas doing some talks. I tried to convince them this was how they were hauling cattle, and they said this was from Oklahoma. And further south, there's even other ways. I don't think there's any question where these cattle are come from with the ear on them. Probably a lesson to be stated is every biological system has its limitations, and we can only push it so far. I don't know what the next great bailout's going to be, but from the State of the Union, I think things are getting better. I didn't know what they did with these cars. Apparently, they're in the back of the White House. But as you walk up and down the trade show, you can see all of these technologies available to you. And I think it's really a challenge for producers to sort through these and which ones are applicable to your operation, which ones are not. What should we be using? What should we not be using? But I think we need to boil it down to something very simple. How are these things going to affect the most important trait in beef cattle production? I don't care if you're a packer or a feeder, this is of vital importance to our industry, and that's why we hold conferences like this. But reproduction is the most important factor for profitable beef production. There's a lot of things that go into it. George mentioned pretty lowly heritable as we're able to measure the direct reproductive traits today. So we tend, and a lot of the things I'm going to talk about, we tend to manage for reproduction. A lot of it's through body condition, which obviously is a reflection of nutritional status. But if we think about all these events, you've already heard all the things that have to happen to give birth to a live calf. How many genes do you think are involved? Literally thousands. And to get a good handle on the genetic component of reproduction is going to be a real challenge, and I don't know if our technology will ever lead us there, so we tend to manage for reproduction. Then we throw on top of this other traits in the beef system that are important to our industry. We throw in carcass traits, we throw in growth traits, we throw in milk production, and we have antagonisms. We have antagonistic traits that if we select too much on, say, milk or size, we're gonna hamper reproduction. We want, in our industry, our cow-calf producers want to exist on a very low input system, as well as do the calves during growth to weaning, and then we send them to a feedlot, give them all they can eat, and expect them not to be a yield grade 4 when we knock them in the head. Is there any challenges in genetic management in our beef industry? I think we need to be careful. I think we need to be careful on selection for extremes and growth traits. This is yearling weight, mature weight, and milk. That's average. That's average in the Angus breed. Average is not zero. So we need to be careful how these traits that are important in other phases of the industry are going to affect the cow-calf producer. A very important lesson. This is the dairy industry. These are cow numbers. This is milk. That's all they're interested in. But what's happened? They've eroded reproduction. They have eroded any genetic differences in that population. It's been estimated that the population size of U.S. Holstein breeds 36 head. How much of the inbreeding goes into their failed reproductive performance as well as this extreme level of productivity? I think we need to be careful in the beef industry. How can we solve some of these issues? Well, one of them, and maybe not this way, but crossbreeding. All across the United States, this has been shown. This was some work at Montana State, showed that a crossbred cow compared to a straightbred counterpart per year, and I believe a couple years ago at BIF, we were told that's $100. $100 advantage per year to have a crossbred cow in your herd compared to a straightbred. But it has to be the right biological type. If we have big animals that are high milk production, just because they're crossbred don't mean they're going to stay in the herd. They have to fit the environment. And I'm happy to announce this is not a Nebraska picture, but there are some other creatures roaming the sand hills due to some land acquisitions that aren't native. Just like this tractor did not fit this environment of crossing this bridge at 10:30 at night in visions of $8 corn. This was south of Lexington, and I was assured that these cranes were not in downtown Lexington, Nebraska. So how are nutrient requirements influenced? Well, size, milk, pregnancy, body condition, weather, all go into nutrient requirements of an animal. I think this was stated yesterday, that if you were to look at a single factor at calving that influences when an animal will cycle back, body condition is very important. And I don't disagree with that, but I don't think it is maybe the most important factor to cause reproductive success or when cyclicity. And we'll go into some examples here as we go along. But if we have animals in low body condition, we have decreased ovarian activity and more days to conception. We often think about our nutrition program with this vision in mind, though, don't we? We think that if we feed an animal too much, we're going to have dystocia problems, and that's just absolutely not true. Scientists have tried to titrate what particular nutrients might affect dystocia, or more specifically, or birth weight, or more specifically, dystocia. This is some work at Miles City, low, medium, high energy. You can see a slight increase in birth weight, but dystocia went the other way. You wonder why those birth weights were, those are some line one Hereford cows. This was some ancillary project I did at Wyoming, overfeeding protein before calving. And we may have increased birth weight slightly, but I would argue with this lower level of nutrition, we actually decreased birth weight, but calving ease wasn't affected. So you can't starve the dystocia out of your animals. You're going to go the other way. If we look at nutrient requirements for animals, they're not that high. If you, on a percentage basis, and all these classes of animals, 7, 8, 11% protein up to 62% TDN, as a percent, and I hate using percents because it implies what? It implies intake. It implies how much an animal needs to eat to meet her requirements. And animals do not have a percent requirement for anything. They have a total amount they need. So when do we run into problems? We run into problems in situations where we're grazing dormant forages, whether it be dormant winter grass, dormant corn residue. When protein drops somewhere below this 7% line, what happens is intake drops, digestibility decreases, and animals physically cannot eat enough to meet their requirements. How do we correct that? We supplement with the first limiting nutrient, which is protein in that case. Another concern, though, in feeding animals harvested diets or harvested forages or other supplements is when we get into a situation where we feed too much protein. There has been work done where they've looked at feeding excess, and this is degradable intake protein. They had elevated plasma urea nitrogen, and conception rates were lower. And this other study just showed it with pastures that were fertilized. They had lower conception rate when heifers grazed pastures that were fertilized. Sandy Johnson was involved in this study with wheat pasture range and found no difference in overall preg rate. In this much different environment of nutrients with wheat pasture than range. Final preg rates, again, were not different. So it's not simple. It's not just protein. It's a balance, protein, energy, because I've run across situations. For example, when I was in Montana, we bred about 750 cows on a project in the panhandle in Nebraska on irrigated pivots. And this was primarily alfalfa, or taken over by alfalfa. We went back to preg check them in the fall. We got 25% pregnant. And I was convinced this was a phytoestrogen issue with legumes until I ran into a producer. He called me from the central part of Nebraska and was preg checking cows. He said he had to check 100 of them to find 60 pregnant ones to go to corn stalks. And I said they were on irrigated grass with legumes, right? No, no legumes, just grass. And I said, what did the cows look like? He said, they looked absolutely terrible. They were thin. When they urinated, it killed the grass in the patches. So this was way too much nitrogen in a situation where they fertilized before breeding. They kept this very lush vegetative, too much protein. If we go into even more specifics on the crude on protein and break it down to bypass protein, when we feed excess bypass protein, there's a couple studies that have shown negative effects on reproduction, on heifer fertility. So what feedstuffs are high in bypass protein? Well, meat and bone meal, a lot of the animal protein sources were fish meal, feather meal, which we don't have access to anymore, but we do have access to one, at least in Nebraska and a lot of parts of the country, that is very high in bypass protein, and that's distiller's grain. This study in Illinois, they way overfed protein. They fed 13 pounds of gluten feed and 12 pounds of alfalfa. Why would you feed a protein supplement on top of a high-quality alfalfa hay? But interestingly, they had decent AI preg rates. And I hear 97 versus 90% in the corn gluten feed and distillers after a 45-day cleanup. So energy was probably adequate. But as I mentioned, distillers are very high in bypass. So we designed a study to overfeed bypass protein to look at the effect on reproduction. And we balanced these diets for crude protein and fat. So we wanted to take out that effect. I'm going to talk some about fat here in a minute. But basically what we saw was those heifers fed distillers actually had a higher AI conception rate. And we were feeding about 0.6% of body weight. So on a 7-weight heifer, we're talking 4 to 5 pounds, right? So not, it was overfeeding protein, but not greatly, as that Illinois study did. It's a balance. It's not as simple as just too much protein. It's protein and energy and that balance that's important to clear this excess ammonia or urea that can have a problem with fertility. And then we break it down to the fraction of DIP, UIP. I think overfeeding either one can be a problem if you don't have adequate energy. Minerals, John Patterson was wandering around here. I know he's not here this morning, but it's complex. We have all these things going on in trace mineral nutrition. We have antagonists, which might be a more consideration than just actual supplemental minerals. But we have sulfur, nitrates, sulfates, tying up things like copper, zinc, that we know are important to reproduction. Studies feeding excess molybdenum, these heifers had delayed puberty, lower ovulation, conception. It wasn't specifically something molybdenum did to the reproductive process other than it tied up copper. I always tell my good friend John Patterson, and I don't know if this cow has a copper deficiency or not, but I don't think it's her number one concern today. Apparently a tornado. I think this was in Missouri, Dave Patterson, but I'm not sure where. Critical times, I think we do need to supplement minerals. You know, prior to calving for immune status of that calf and breed back of that cow through the breeding season, and probably again for immune function in that calf, we want to supplement a little before weaning. Monansin and Bovatec, the ionophores, independent of the other things that we feed them for, have a positive effect on reproduction. This was a study, I think Randall reported this from Texas on a review he wrote years ago, but found that on postpartum interval, cows fed an ionophore versus control, just look at the differences, positive effect in all cases. Fat. This originally, this talk was all about fat supplementation. And I said, well, I think there's other things to consider in nutrition than fat supplementation. I'm going to go through this rather rapidly because I concur with what Gary Williams said yesterday. It is not a cure-all. If you have a fat source that is economical, it is a very concentrated energy source that can be a supplement in your operation. The question has been, does fat improve reproductive efficiency? And I took this picture about an hour after these deer were seen grazing in a soybean field, and apparently some of the effects can be rather dramatic and immediate, but don't know if anything got bred there. Why do we feed fat? It is very energy dense, reduced dust, palatability. Propionate, that might be a mechanism by which it could potentially have a positive effect on reproduction. It is a precursor for hormones. Steroid hormones are all fat-based, aren't they? Does it have direct positive effects on reproduction? That is debatable. I've written a review article on it, and conclusions are it is not a magical cure-all. There's a lot of sources. That's part of the variability we see in the research is fat is not fat is not fat. There are a lot of fat sources, and fat is based on their fatty acid profiles. Tallow, soybean oil, fish oil, all have very different fatty acid profiles, and I believe that these fatty acids specifically are what cause the ultimate effects either on reproduction or hormones. I think Gary showed this yesterday, but if we just look at follicular growth, there's differences depending on what fat source we feed. Things that have been reported, differences in body weight, condition, calving interval, milk production, milk composition, conception rates, age of puberty, mammary development, calving difficulty, cold tolerance. This is one of the original reasons, I'll just show you a study quickly, that fat was fed in some of these early studies that Bellows did at Miles City, birth weight, weaning weight. We've done work with heifer development, fat supplementation 30 to 60 days before, about 1,000 heifers before breeding, and a lot of different genetics, and we didn't see any benefit. We saw no benefit of feeding whole sunflower seeds before breeding. We've looked at wet corn gluten feed, distillers, and soybeans and heifer diets, and back to that study I showed you with distillers. The reason we balanced for fat in this study, because we wanted to take out that effect. And we still saw a positive effect on reproduction independent, or even though the two supplements were equal in fat. So there's something, I'm convinced. So we have some other data in first calf heifers and in breeding cows fed distillers that have a positive effect on reproduction. Now, all bets are off if you're greatly overfeeding protein. But this bypass fraction, and I believe it's due to specific amino acids, does have an effect on fertility. Others have looked at this as control, cottonseed, soybean, and soy hulls. Just point out, there's been some concern of feeding whole raw soybeans. We've done several studies. This study also validated first service conception rates were not negatively affected. If anything, they were increased with soybeans. Why would soybeans be a concern? Remember I mentioned phytoestrogens. Soybeans contain phytoestrogens because they're a legume. But at reasonable rates, we have not seen, and others have not, a negative effect on reproduction. We just break it down into prepartum and postpartum supplementation. Most of the benefits have been shown feeding fat before calving. Bellows did this study with two different safflower varieties or a control. It was interesting why he did this, though. He fed it prepartum because there was literature in other species, something economically important like the rat, that if you fed them a fatty acid source before rats do have their litters, that they actually had increased fat deposition in the pups. So what Bellows did, he fed this fat before calving, and then he took these calves off the cow. They, I believe, fed them colostrum. Then they exposed them to a cold environment, which I know is difficult to find in Miles City in the wintertime, right, George? But anyway, these calves that came from high-fat cows had higher body temperature. They had higher glucose levels. They had higher insulin levels. So this might be a mechanism by which we could potentially increase calf survival in cold environments. One thing he wasn't counting on, when he looked at reproductive rates in these cows, those that were fed fat up to calving had higher pregnancy rates, and they quit feeding it at calving. So it was interesting, but I think this goes along with what was said yesterday. Those aren't great reproductive rates, are they? 50%, 57% at the end of a breeding season. If your reproductive rates are poor, you probably have a better chance of seeing a positive effect to fat, but maybe you have a better chance of seeing positive effect to supplementation with anything. Other work's been done. Again, here's some different sources. Just look at preg rates, slight increase with the different fat sources. Missouri fed some soybeans to mature cows, basically before and after calving, and they found a higher conception rate in soybean-fed cows that were fed soybeans before, but not after calving. Prepartum, Brett Hess did an analysis of a lot of the literature out there, and he said that if you feed fat about approximately 60 days before calving, you may have about a 6% improvement in herds that have a below 90% preg rate anyway. Postpartum fat supplementation, Sandy did some work and actually saw a negative effect feeding fat post-calving. This was some work a former PhD student of mine did on his master's. Fed a full corn germ, pre, post, and control. Okay, no difference in cyclicity, no difference in final preg rate. One interesting thing, if we look at calving interval, those that were fed fat before calving actually bred back sooner, even though overall preg rate was not affected. Fish meal has been used. Pat Burns, when he was at Colorado, did this. Two different studies. One where they fed them both before or after calving, but they were on two different diets after the supplementation, either a silage-based ration or grazing pasture. And they found two different effects. Those that were put on pasture, there was no benefit of feeding fish meal. And I talked to Dr. Bellows about that. He saw a lot of variability too, and it seemed very dependent on the year, the precipitation. I said, how much fat is in these grasses? Some of these cool season grasses are very high in fat. So in a lush environment where we have good spring grass, we probably are going to mask any effect we might saw by feeding fat. Postpartum did not consistently decrease the anovulatory period. First service conception rates were not affected. In the studies I've shown you, there was no detrimental effects on reproduction, but I will give a word of caution. Some Wyoming data feeding fat that's high in linoleic acid. Three or four studies decreased first service conception rate, increased days to conception, increased prostaglandin, altered hormones that were important for reproductive process. Why would this cause a negative effect on reproduction? Remember what George said about prostaglandins in early embryonic development being potentially toxic? Well, linoleic acid is a precursor to arachidonic acid, which is a precursor to what? Prostaglandin. Do you know what the fatty acid profile is in the fat sources you're buying? There's high linoleic acid safflower. There's low linoleic acid safflower. There's soybeans that are high and low in linoleic acid. Now, this is kind of important to know, but a word of caution, I probably wouldn't feed something real high in fat postpartum because of this work. Most benefits been shown in feeding before calving. The diet after calving is important. Birth weight may increase slightly, but dystocia has not been negatively affected. Might have a benefit in cold tolerance. In newborns, concern here again of feeding something high in linoleic acid. Bottom line, you price it against other protein and energy sources. If it works in, you might get some benefit, just mainly more as an energy source, though. But most fat supplements are high in protein because they come from oilseed extraction in a lot of cases. I think this was stated yesterday that these animals that are nutritionally challenged may have more of a response than animals that are in adequate nutrition. Balance, we got to have, is a key in all nutritional programs. We consider all the things, protein, energy, minerals, vitamins. I'm sure in Texas with all your oil industry, you have issues like Montana does with water quality. I don't live in Montana anymore. I'm in Nebraska where water quality is pretty darn good, but there are point sources that aren't so good. But you got to consider what nutrients or antagonisms, maybe more specifically, might be coming from your water sources as well. want to just go through maybe some strategic inputs with nutrition and how they might influence reproduction. These are three different programs of heifer development, okay? Different planes of nutrition at different times. Clanton found no difference in age at puberty, conception rate, or calf performance the next year. Some work out of Kansas, this even gain versus late gain system, no difference in age and weight of puberty, but they did it with 12% less feed. We need to consider some of these things in this economic environment where our feed inputs are probably going to be high, a lot higher than they have been historically. Maybe more importantly, though, in these two systems, this red and blue line, which you think had higher preg rates, same percent body weight at breeding. Let's look at the first service conception rate, even gain, late gain. We actually had a positive effect by having a low plane of nutrition per period and then feeding those animals, something I think we referred to in sheep as flushing. I don't think we have a true flushing effect in cattle in that we don't create more twins as we might in sheep, but I do think the alteration of nutrition plane up to breeding or changing it prior to breeding can actually kick animals on cycling. Maybe more importantly, though, and this isn't the same study, but three different similar development systems. Harv Friedley did this at Mark at Clay Center. This, look at the difference in the percent of cows still in the herd dependent on how they were fed as heifer calves. I think George alluded to this. We have a lot of data that would support this, that those heifers that were taught or exposed to an environment in which they were going to have to exist as cows, if they were exposed early, they actually had higher preg rates later in life. I think this heifer development thing needs to be very, very maybe reconsidered as far as inputs and what we're doing to the behavior and maybe longevity of that animal for the rest of its life. Let's go the opposite here. Cliff Lamb, who was here yesterday, this is some work he did in Minnesota, fed heifers to reach either a 7 or a condition score 5. Then they were restricted until they quit cycling. They both had to get to a 3. Then they refed them to see when they started cycling again. These fat heifers had to get a full condition score higher to start cycling than these heifers kept at a moderate condition. Is it possible that we can program our heifers, depending on how we develop them, to have to reach some critical body composition to ever cycle again the rest of their life? Are we creating inefficient animals? There's some hormones that are secreted from fat that I think Dr. Lauderdale might have mentioned or someone else yesterday. Leptin, for example, is a hormone that's very important to reproduction that's produced by fat cells. A lot of the work we do in Nebraska is in systems research, and it's really, really exciting and interesting that we look at inputs at different times in the system, but how do they affect that entire system? A lot of the things we want to do is lower input costs. The best way you can lower input costs is to not harvest as much feed and deliver it in iron every day. And we graze a lot of winter grass and we graze a lot of corn stalks in Nebraska. One of the management options to maybe graze year-round might be to wean early. We wean early in this situation. We had higher body condition in these cows. They calved about here March and April. These were weaned in November, actually. Look what they were doing prior to breeding. Which do you think had the higher conception rate? Remember, we got to have a condition score 5 at calving or she's going to cycle late, right? They were the same. Another management practice that we utilized with poor quality feedstuffs that I talked about earlier was supplementation. We supplement cows on corn stalks or on winter grass, but these were not. And they got down to a little over a 4 at calving. Look what they were doing prior to breeding. Which did you think had higher preg rates? They were the same. Remember what I said about that flushing effect? Look what's happening here. We're not feeding those cows. They're feeding on good green grass. And that's what their body condition is doing. I always say I would much rather breed a thin cow on an increasing plane of nutrition than a fat cow going the other way any day of the week. I'll take that bet. Brian alluded to some of the work that we've done on what are we doing to an animal that's not even born yet with nutritional status of its dam? What can we influence traits of those calves before they're ever born. Again, we either had a situation where we did not feed protein, or we did during winter grazing. This other treatment I won't even mention because there was no difference. We looked at the heifer calves from cows that were either supplemented or not. Birth weights, similar. Weaning weights were lighter, and we've seen this in steers as well, which I don't have a problem with. And weights at preg check were lower. Maybe so far so good in those heifer calves that weren't supplemented. Maybe we can make a smaller animal that's more efficient. Well, let's look at fertility, reproduction, age of puberty, not affected, percent cycling, not affected. Those calving in the first 21 days, huge difference. Final preg rates, 13% lower if that heifer came from a cow that was not supplemented in the last trimester of gestation. We affected fertility in these animals before they were even born. We've done work on corn stalks and winter grass with and without supplementation. The one thing I will point out, in all of our studies, and we have many years of data now, we have never seen a positive effect on pregnancy of that cow herself by supplementing her in late gestation. We did see an animal weight response. Range supplemented had higher weight on winter range than those not supplemented. We saw no benefit of supplementation on corn stalks, not even on weight change. We did, though, we kept these cows on the same treatment for 3 years on protein or not on winter grass, and we saw an increase in the percent calving in the first 21 days by 21%. No difference in final preg rate, but those cows that were supplemented in late gestation actually conceived earlier. I know we're talking about fertility here, but a lot of the things that might be talked about this afternoon are reasons to AI. Are we aiming at specific goals in our offspring? I think this lesson that I'm going to try to go through rather rapidly is you can do everything right with genetics, with your breeding program, everything right in selection, and with management, you can change the outcome very dramatically. Let's look at the steers that came from these cows that were not supplemented. Range supplement, range no supplement, we decreased final live weight by 70 pounds on that steer if he came from a cow that was not supplemented. We affected carcass weight before that calf was ever born. This is carcass weight here, but not in the corn stalk system. No difference. Let's look at quality grades, something that's very important to Dr. Larry Cora, who's here today. Range supplement, range no supplement. Stock supplement, stocks no supplement. This is percent choice. Why this split? We affected the percent choice, and this is upper two-thirds of choice. Both systems, look what we did to the higher end choice ability of that animal was affected before he was ever born. And overall, quality grade, 86-71%. We got these calves finishing at about 14, 15 months out of a 1,200-pound cow that are producing a 1,350-pound calf that's going to grade like this. These are composites. They're Simmental Red Angus cattle. Just another point of importance in looking at what your goals are. We took this data from feeding our steer calves in the feedlot, and we broke it down by when those calves were born. First, second, third cycle. Weaning weights were affected. If they were born early, they were heavier at weaning. Makes sense. No difference in gain. Carcass weights were heavier if they were born earlier. Marbling scores were greater. Percent choice was greater than in the third cycle. But look at the upper two-thirds of choice. We affected quality grade in those calves by when they were born. Another reason to synchronize, another reason to try to get that calving season as tight as possible. And Dr. Cora, before this program started today, said, I don't know how many thousands ahead you said from that producer, but he said, we looked at this in another group of cattle, and he said it overlaid very nicely to this data. Those animals that conceive early and calve early are going to have offspring that are going to be more valuable at weaning, more valuable at harvest, and those cows themselves are going to have a better chance to breed back if they calve early. That is an event that I think we really need to focus on, and nutrition is very important in that event. Look at the heifers from this study. range supplement, no supplement. Again, we affected body weight. Preg rates were lower in both systems without supplementation in those calves that came from cows that weren't supplemented. Again, something that happened prior to birth affected all these things. This fetal programming effect, or this stimuli experienced during fetal development, not may, does impact postnatal growth and physiology. I know this might be a stretch, but are there things that happen even around conception that might affect that offspring after weaning? And that bodes the question, when did Michael Phelps become a good swimmer? We know that there are genes that are affected by nutrition during early embryonic development, around the time of ovulation. Now, let me just give you an example. Let's think of a company that used to be in Texas that was big into cloning. And what were they called? Granada Genetics. And what happened? They had animals that were monsters, that were huge birth weights that shouldn't have been genetically. And we now, in the other scientific community, believe that happened by that early embryonic development, even in the petri dish, when they were cloning those animals. They were setting up, they were changing DNA due to that environment of that embryo. I was told by a large rancher in Nebraska that he didn't believe this at first. We did a study on their place where we supplemented heifers around the time of breeding. And I said, we actually increased birth weight in the heifers that we supplemented around breeding. He said, what? That can't happen. Then he got to thinking. He says, you know, we put embryos in a lot of cows when I was in Florida. And those fat recip cows, they had calves that had birth weights that they shouldn't have had. That environment, that nutritional environment, or that those signals that are happening because of body condition or nutrition or in the petri dish can affect a lot of things early on in development. Nutrition's complex. And I didn't go into a lot of the basic mechanism, but this is what's going on. You got all these signals that are signaling the brain of whether or not to cycle and ovulate. And understanding these basic mechanisms are going to help us make better recommendations to producers that produce cattle in a variety of environments across the country that maybe calve in a variety of elements to actually have greater reproductive success in their animals and to affect that most important trait. With that, I will have questions, I guess, later today.